This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Welcome, listeners. Just a quick heads up before the show starts. Unfortunately, Dan can't join us for the next couple of weeks. And obviously, we beat the Blues, so we had to do a show. So at the last minute, I got Chris Budd in. Thanks, Chris, for coming to our rescue. We actually recorded this on location, and unfortunately, one of our mics wasn't working, so we had to share a mic, and we're in public, so it's a little bit more subdued than normal. So please do bear that in mind, and if you're a first-time listener, it's not a typical show, put it that way. Anyway, enjoy.
When I go home late at night, this is a song that I really like to sing right now, so I'll play it for you. It's called My Old Man.
Welcome to your local Lichfield podcast, My Old Man Said. I'm David Michael, the editor of myoldmansaid.com. Joining me this week, first time back since September, Chris Budd. How are you doing, Chris?
I'm very well. Very smug.
I think the last time we spoke, we were this kind of middling, going nowhere, middle of the championship team. But now we're this gigantic promotion juggernaut. Do you feel like now we're in second, we're just going to stay there?
I think... game on as of Saturday. I think Saturday's game against Fulham will be where we really will know if we're going to stick around or not. But so far, so good as of the turn of the year.
I think the last podcast, obviously, we spoke about Burton, and I was a bit worried going into the Blues game. I mean, we'll get into the Blues game shortly, but this was a different Villa that played Burton. Against the Blues, we were committed. It was a lot more intense, and we completely bossed it.
I think it was just the tempo that we played at as well. Once we got our foot on the ball, we actually wanted to go out and hurt them rather than, you know, the previous two or three derby games where we've really tried to battle and grind out a result. I think we just took the game by the scruff of the neck
and throttled them
literally.
Anyway, we'll get into the Blues in a second. First of all, we'll have the 3 points of the week. Well, I think the real talking point is we're actually in the promotion spots for the first time since we got relegated.
Hurrah. And now, it's almost nosebleed territory, isn't it?
Well, from what we used to, definitely. So now it's just two things to do now. One is just stay there to the rest of the season, and the other one is do we encroach into Mordor and track down the dogheads?
The webbed feet brigade.
Do you think the dogheads are caused too far gone? I think it's like 12 points.
Yeah, I think if we'd have been here at the turn of the year, I think we might have had a chance. But I don't even think Steve Bruce really thinks we'll catch them. I think we very much want to cement second place and pull away from what's beneath us.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't ventured any ambitions of catching them. But what I have kind of said, I think, on the blog is... Wolves have got three trickyish games in February. I think they play Fulham. I think they play Norwich as well. If there's a single points gap at the end of this month, then we might have a chance, because obviously we've still got to play them at home as well.
I think it comes down to the fact that they haven't had a run of injuries or suspensions. They haven't had that hit to the squad that necessarily we had. I think they've definitely got the better start in 11. We've definitely got the strength in depth, but that doesn't really come into force until Wolves get an injury to one of the key, the three lads that they brought in for big money or the spine of their team.
Yeah, I think, our problem was the start of the season where we won one in the first six or seven games. And if you look at the... our home records are pretty similar. I think there's only 3 points difference, and it's where we've fallen down is their away record is about 9 points better off. So they've performed better away, and I think it's because we started off slow. But anyway, let's not get too involved in that. I think if we can just cement second, and Fulham's obviously a key game for that, that'll be more than enough. Meanwhile, at the second point is our potential replacements in the Championship. The Baggies seem to be imploding, sacking both their chairman and CEO. 7 points off safety with only 11 games to play. I mean, people are kind of relaxed going into this new year, but it's quickly catching up that it's almost the end of the season. I think they're in big trouble. Do you think they'll get out there?
I look at their team and you think they brought in Sturridge to kind of be there, shoot them to safety, and they've lost him after 3 minutes.
How is he out for long? Or
I think it's another hamstring injury, or it's his usual hamstring injury, so I don't think he'll be around for too long. He might play games, but I can't see him being the sort of the saviour that they hope for. And I don't see where their goals are going to come from.
I mean, they should have just stick with Pulis and just hope that his record of never being relegated kicked in. It was a bit of a suicide mission, getting rid of him and actually bringing in Pardew. When you read about what the Baggies have been saying, they were just relying on the new manager bounce, and that was it. That was their simple philosophy.
I think it's the lack of ambition at higher up in the club and in the boardroom has finally come home to roost. They've been happy to sort of just get by, get safe, take the TV money and not invest in a squad or a better team.
But the Chinese owner, very much like in Villa's position, needs to be in the Premier League to leverage a lot of other kind of business activity.
Absolutely. I think, unlike previous years when they've gone down, I think this year they would actually go down and have some of their team ripped to pieces as well.
Yeah.
So I don't necessarily think they would go down and come straight back up.
Yeah, I think... Short-term, Villa were in a bad position in terms of a new owner coming in terms of, obviously, after not getting instant promotion, all these plans to, rebuild the North Stand and smart cities in Aston and all this kind of stuff are all on the back burner because we've got no money until... we're not allowed to spend any money until we're in the Premier League. But if we get promoted this season, same with Wolves, at least we can go forward. Well, the Baggies, I think... got their new owner in place and then dropped. It's a bit of a sticky situation.
Yeah,
anyway,
I think Villa and Wolves are both teams with momentum moving forward further than just this year. They've obviously got very ambitious, management higher up in the club, unlike the Baggies. And I think they have plans to get to the Premier League and then push on. I think the Baggies have been very stable for a while, and all of a sudden the plateau has gone down rather than up.
Yeah, and they've kind of been caught a little bit with their pants. They've had their pants pulled down, really. Final point, number three, and this carries on from last week when we talked about Dele Alli's sex tape and the various Villa sex tapes of yesteryear. Jermaine Pennant, I think he's getting his lawyers in because he's going to try to sue a newspaper for calling him a porn star.
I think his Billericay Town career's really hit an all-time low, hasn't it? He's looking for the free publicity for his book, and it's gone downhill.
Yeah, he's got a book coming out. Is there anybody out there who's going to buy Jermaine Pennant's biography?
A book called Mental.
And it's called Mental. I don't think it's going to trouble the New York Times bestsellers list.
I think it's a colouring book.
It's like the ultimate journeyman. We're mainly mentioning him because, obviously, of his Blues connections, and since we are celebrating Villa's controlled execution at Villa Park, we thought we'd throw him in there.
Jack Grealish toying with Birmingham City. And the Vilma has latched onto it! A goal which sends Villa Park crazy! A roar which can be heard right across the second city! And a moment which makes Birmingham City heart sink! A difficult week for Steve Bruce. But Albert Adoma stands as the king of the Holt End
Moving on to the Blues game, going into the game, only Bolton had a worse away record than the Blues. But the thing is, the Blues' recent form, their last four away games, they've won two and drawn two, and that's like 8 points out of their 10 away points. So their first, I think, 11 games, they'd got 2 points. So
yeah, I think they've been scoring goals as well. I think definitely from the Villa side of things, everybody who I spoke to, they were a little bit sort of apprehensive. I mean, everyone has Derby Day nerves, but this time I think the Blues fans genuinely thought they could come and get a result. And I think there was a few Villa fans who thought we were going to get much more of a good game than it actually ended up being.
Yeah, no, I thought it was definitely a potential banana skin. I mean, first of all, to that 100% record of 2018. But I think a lot of Blues fans, they were kind of cajoled on by their recent form, and they'd actually kind of solidified them, got a bit of momentum going to get out the bottom three. So I think they felt comfortable that this was a good time to derail Villa.
Yeah, and I think they thought that it was the sort of the law of averages or whatever, that they had to come here and win at some point. And that they'd probably give it a really good go, and it was quite the opposite, in fact.
Yeah, I think a lot of Blues fans were disappointed by what they actually saw. I mean, I don't know how much that's down to the Blues' lack of effort. I mean, they're always on about Cottrell's not very good in terms of his substitutions, and I was quite surprised to see Hotter not actually being in the first 11, because I thought he caused Villa's problems at St Andrews. I mean, obviously he had that glaring chance that he fucked up.
I think he's a good player. I don't necessarily think Cottrell must have thought he's not the kind of guy you play in a derby. You know, he's not going to track back and he's not going to be up for the fight.
But yeah, that's a good point.
At some point, you kind of need to show a bit of quality, which they severely lacked.
Because he'd been out of their first 11, I think most of this year, but he came back against Sheffield Wednesday, scored two goals. So I thought that's his inclusion. But yeah, they need, apart from Boga is he on the left wing?
Yeah, he had a good game.
He was very bright. The Chelsea loanee, I think he's only 20, but he was like their only real threat and spark.
Yeah, I think he actually gave Al Mohammadi a really tough game. You know, I think Al Mohammadi is very much the fullback who wants to get forward, and he'll cause them problems that way. But you know, going the other way, I think he, I wouldn't say sort of got away with one that game, but he certainly was visibly been targeted by the Blues to really get after him, whereas a lot of teams normally would go after Hutton and down our left hand side.
Yeah, and I think if Boga had a bit more support, he would have had a bit more of purchase.
Yeah, or just a focal point to the attack. I think he was just very isolated.
I mean, the only change Villa made was something that I spoke about in the Blues preview, was I kind of half expected Bruce to bring in Jedinak, because James Chester's only 5'10". And they're obviously playing 6'4" Sam Gallagher, so I thought Jedinak at the back to stop any kind of long balls. But Blues didn't really play that kind of game. They didn't try to pump the ball in as much as possible to take advantage of Gallagher's height.
I think they pumped it forward very aimlessly. There was no sort of, it was almost like they just lacked a plan. You know, I know Cottrell came out after the game and said they lacked belief, and it was very much, you could see that every time they had the ball, they'd kind of look up and
they
didn't have a clue.
The ball never got past Jedinak most of the time.
He had a brilliant game, didn't he? To be fair, you know, I can't remember him losing a header or a tackle. Which, if that was the job he was brought in to do, then he's more than done.
I mean, the only time it really bypassed him was when John Terry made a bit of a dog's ass of a long ball, and Sam Gallagher was put on through. But I think Sam Johnson did a good job of like narrowing the angle, because Gallagher was coming in.
I mean, it was
quite
tough.
Tight.
It was a tough chance.
Yeah.
I think, I mean, he hit the target. He's done well. The rebound, I don't think he was expecting to get, and has ballooned it into the whole ten.
Yeah.
But you know, that was the only sight of goal they had. Really.
Well, they hit the bar as well.
Did they in the second half?
Yeah,
so they did. Yeah. I'd already switched off by that point.
You're already celebrating. Yeah, but I mean, these are like snap chances. They didn't really have any sustained pressure, or I was never worried at any stage, really.
No, it was a weird one. How we, you know, it took us an hour to break them down, and on, you know, probably the Villa of last year would have started to panic at 60 minutes, and definitely the fans would have started to get a bit antsy. But I think there was always the feeling that we have the players now that we'll always have that moment of quality, and luckily we did.
I mean,
as soon as the goal went in, I don't think anybody doubted who was going to win the game.
Because this is the first time we've actually dominated them for a while, because normally when we've won, they've been kind of scrappy 1-0s, especially the last two times at Villa Park, including the cup game with Rudi Gestede.
I think it was just the intent of having a focal point to our attack as well. You know, we had Grealish, we had Hourihane getting forward, Adoma wants to get his foot on the ball and play, so does Snodgrass, and Hogan worked hard. You know, we had sort of four or five players who really wanted to get on the front foot this time. I don't think we wanted to sort of play deep, be very solid and play off a single striker. We really had a plan, as we've had since the turn of the year, and really stuck to our game plan, which is, I think, is the best way to play against Blues.
Yeah, before in those scrappy games, after the game, Blues have always, you know, Blues fans have had that argument, like, you know, if we had, you know, if we scored here, if the ref gave a penalty there, blah blah blah. But this time it's just silence because they know they were just bossed off the park.
Yeah, I think from what I've seen online, they are really disappointed. I don't think necessarily as much at either the result or getting beaten by a better side, but they're much more annoyed at the lack of sort of effort, and they lost the fight, which one thing I think you can always give Blues credit for is they'll give you a good game and they'll fight you sort of right till the end, and they'd kind of thrown the towel in as soon as the first goal went in. I think it just almost looked like it was inevitable that we'd run all over them after about an hour.
Because I think I was a bit worried going into this game, mainly because of what I saw against Burton, but I think two things played into it. It was obviously the full house, and, you know, the crowd were fired up as the players came on the pitch, but also, you know, what's happened to Bruce over the last couple of weeks, with obviously his father passing away and his mother having a serious illness. I think there was this kind of mentality to do it, you know, obviously for Bruce, and go out there and really
there was definitely a togetherness. You know, you could see that when both goals went in, and after the game they were very
much before the game as well. Terry was giving everybody man hugs.
A bit
more than normal, I thought.
And they celebrated as a team.
But I mean, going back to Grealish, he's been outstanding in the last few weeks, and this is obviously another level. Is obviously he's going to be pumped up for this. But the boy was tackling back. He was playing like a.
It was almost like a box-to-box
midfielder. I mean, and he didn't lose many tackles as well. I think he dispossessed them like two or three times when you didn't expect him. Like, if you're looking at it as the mindset of Grealish of old, you'd have thought he'd be out-muscled or something.
Yeah, and it was, you know, the battle against Ndoye game, and Ndoye had to foul him. You know, he was very deserving of his red card. You know, he was lucky to stay on the pitch as long as he did, really.
I mean, the only thing that I was actually worried about any time in the game was just Sam Johnson's distribution, and I didn't know if that was the player or the pitch was kind of playing
into that. The pitch has been dreadful since the turn of the year, really, hasn't it?
Yeah, I went against Peterborough. My sister was looking after these. I put it on Instagram a few weeks ago, looking after these two kids from Chernobyl, and at the last minute, Villa organises us to have a little tour around the dressing rooms and meet Steve Bruce before the Peterborough game for the kids. We were in on the pitch, and we're next to Elphick, Grealish, Elmo when they were warming up, and I remember Elphick turning to us and just saying, "This pitch is fucking shit."
Well, it looked like the UV lights they'd had on, they just looked like they'd been left on.
Yeah.
The rain just dug in. It was like railway lines, it was just tracks in pitch.
Considering the reputation of Villa Park and the pitch over the years, and how our head groundsman got poached by Paris Saint-Germain, and we still won awards after him because, you know, the people that took over were still very.
And there it is, that's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van, unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Good. Getting back to Johnson, I think, you know, his kicking is probably the one thing to work on in his game. If anything, I think their goalie was probably guilty of being worse.
Yeah,
which was saying something. I mean, the amount of times he shanked it into the stand.
Yeah.
Probably three or four occasions at least from quite simple back passes.
Yeah, he was kind of giving the ball back to them needlessly.
I think that was the pattern of the game, really. Villa would get it at Blues quickly and the ball would come back as soon as it, faster than it went up.
Because, I mean, when you're looking at whether I mean, this is obviously Villa have to get promoted first, but whether Johnson would sign permanently, I think in the Premier League, you saw it at Manchester City with Pep Guardiola and Joe Hart. Joe Hart's distribution was not up to the standards that he wanted, and so he basically ditched him. So I don't know if that's whether his, you know, hit and miss for Sam Johnson in terms of his United career is whether his distribution improves or not.
Maybe. I mean, I don't know if, you know, I don't really have Steve Bruce down as being the sweeper keeper kind of guy. That's a little, you know, it's a little too
progressive at the moment.
No,
what
Villa.
I'm saying is Villa will have him. They don't give a shit about his distribution.
But he's a good, solid goalkeeper.
Whether United need that in their setup to have a better a keeper who can actually distribute it, sweeper keeper.
I think Jose in general just has a pretty dreadful track record of bringing through young players. Yeah. Wherever he's been. So I think if there was a problem in goal for United, they'd probably go out and spend another 30, 40 million. Or if De Gea was to leave, they'd probably use that money to go out and buy a like-for-like player. I don't think United are in a position to sort of risk a young player, especially in such a key position.
Yeah. I thought Chester had a great game again. There was one time that where he actually outleapt Sam Gallagher, who's got like 6 inches on him.
I think Chester's just consistent, isn't he?
Yeah, that's why
we don't notice him.
We don't talk about him much.
It's a shame, really, because they've got the sort of the marquee signing of Terry stood next to him.
Yeah,
whereas he just goes about his work quietly. And
because when I like do the player ratings every week, like no problem saying something about every player apart from Chester.
Yeah,
because it's like he just does the same every week.
It's just a seven,
and it's
at
always
least
good
every week, isn't it?
7 or 8 every week. It's always good, but he never does anything that like stands out because he's just doing his job. You know, he's going to get the gold carriage clock at the end of his Villa service.
Yeah,
and you feel like he deserves more accolades.
I think he's the kind of player we've needed.
For a while,
just get the job done. There's no nonsense off the field. He's very
pretty,
consistent
pretty
on it.
Tidy on the ball.
Yeah, he's good on the ball. I think he commands the back four reasonably well. I think Johnson's probably improved from having hit a stable centre back pairing with him and Terry in front of him as well. And I actually think he's got a goal in him at some point.
Yeah. Speaking of goals, I mean, I know most people have just tuned into this podcast to find out the latest Hogan touch count. Didn't score this time, but let's just trace back the last 3 weeks. Against Barnsley, scored 2 goals, but only 12 touches. Against Sheffield United, 13 touches, improving by 1 touch. And in the last game against Burton, 14 touches. Again, but I think he scored. Yeah, he scored.
He did.
But he's been improving by 1 touch a week. This time, 23 touches. No goals, but let's not worry about that.
Hit the bar.
But he looked like a different man. He was like a man possessed. And visually made such a big contribution. I mean, 23 touches doesn't sound a lot. But
I think he's...
And to be honest, I expected it to be more in terms of the stats, but hell of a lot of difference. I mean, it's almost twice as many of his touches.
It'd be interesting to know the yards he covered as well, because he was all over the field. He was chasing down everything on their back four. I think, you know, the cliche of he really put a shift in.
I think
very
it's
fitting for him.
I mean,
on Sunday,
even though he didn't score, I think it was his best performance. I think
he stretched them.
Yeah,
they're finding a way to get the best out of him, and it's very much not using him as a target man, but just using him as a focal point. I think the amount of times he chased down the goalkeeper, especially, was probably part of why we got the ball back so often, because the Blues were kind of getting the ball and either lumping it into the stand or especially in the first half.
But no, it was good stuff from Hogan. And I mean, Lewis Grabon got his first showing, but he didn't really have much to do, because I think the game was won within a couple of minutes of him coming on.
Yeah, I think they got the first one.
Yeah, I think he came on 79th minute.
Yeah, just before the second. Wasn't
yeah, just before the second. So it was kind of game over.
Kind of put himself about a bit.
And Villa didn't really look like they were chasing a third. But I remember Hourihan got the ball down the line and he just went in, you know, walked it to the corner flag. They weren't really going for that third.
No, I think they knew the job was done by this point. I don't think Blues were going to chase the game particularly.
Which is a shame, because I'm not complaining if it was a third or a fourth.
Snodgrass had the one chance at the end, didn't he?
Yeah, no, he played. I mean, Snodgrass is the kind of guy that you just want in the Championship, and especially in the Derby game, because he's, as we've always spoken about in the podcast, he's completely committed.
I think he's got that little nasty streak in him as well, which sometimes you need in a Derby game. You know, he's going to stand up for the guys around him, and if he needs to put his foot in, he will. And he'll take a clattering if the opposition want to dish it out.
Yeah, no, it's, I think he's archetypal championship player in terms of exactly what's symbolically been the main difference from last season when we didn't really have that kind of character in the middle of the pitch.
Yeah, it's just that, as you said, it's a character thing, and I think as well he's got that little bit of quality where he'll, you know, he'll take a kick in all game, but like at Sheffield United he did very little in the game.
Yeah.
Popped up with the goal, and he'll normally, similarly to Adoma really, they'll always input something in the game even if they're having a bad match.
I must admit, I liked Adoma's finish. If you watch the highlights, you'll notice there was a dress rehearsal for that goal, I think, in the first half, where Grealish played another square ball and Adoma went for the near post, but
it was a couple
of yards wide. So when he got the ball this time, everybody was thought it was like odds on he's going to curl it for the far post, but he did exactly the same.
And by that point, it was looking likely that he wouldn't even be on the field. You know, he obviously, he took quite a bad knock in the first half. It looked like Onuma was stripped off and ready to come on. So to get through the whole game, that's sort of a testament to his character as well.
Yeah, I don't know what the update is on his injury. I mean, somebody, when I asked for listener questions or issues to discuss, they wanted to know what the latest was about Adoma, and if he was injured for any length of time, who would you play on the left in his place? There's obviously a temptation to put Grealish there, but I think you need Grealish where he is now, because it just changed the whole dynamic of the team.
He's the focal point of your attack now, isn't he? I think you've got Green, who's been waiting in the wings for a while, sort of patiently. Obviously, he had a brief cameo against Peterborough and hasn't been seen since, so I don't know if that's anything to do with his injury or if they're not trying to rush him back.
You could also put Nomar out there as well, just for the hell of it.
Because why not?
Why not? Was it against Cardiff where he did that nifty move down the left where a defender thought he'd tackled him and he kind of... Have you seen the video? He's like back-heeled it round him and flicked it round him and just left this guy.
He's a good player.
Yeah, he is. He's kind of tidy. Just sometimes he doesn't get stuck in, and he goes missing when it gets a bit tasty, shall we say.
Yeah, I think he could have got interesting on Sunday if he'd have, you know, come on with a good, you know, hour to play in the game. It could have been quite a different game, potentially.
Yeah. Looking at, in terms of the overall picture now in second place, there's this been this fallacy recently when... Especially like the end of last season, when they would refer to Aston Villa's home form as excellent, like the media would say this, or even Steve Bruce would be talking about this. And when you looked at how good our home form was in comparison to the rest of the league, it was always like the 7th, 8th best in the Championship. So it was a bit of a myth. We weren't that good at home. We were drawing too many games. But now we have legitimately second best home form in the league. We're only like 3 points off Wolves'. And so when it comes to the run-in and you're looking at that automatic spot, we've got to play a bunch of teams in, you know, who are obviously going for automatic in the playoffs, and they've all got to come to Villa Park. I mean, maybe that's why our home record is good, because we've only played the crap teams. That could be part of the reason.
I think most of those teams won't be relishing the prospect of having to come to Villa with momentum. I think last year we were a different kettle of fish. I think a lot of teams would probably come here thinking, we can probably get something today. And we've always been guilty of sort of, we'll always gift you a chance. It's whether you're actually clearly clear enough to take it.
I mean, yeah, when you look at our team, it's like, it's kind of, you expect to win every game now.
I mean, you look at the squad.
Exactly.
You look at the guys who can't get even near the bench at the moment, and we've still got...
I mean, I was joking to Dan the other week about, if we were to catch Wolves, we'd probably have to win out the season, which means win every game until the end of the season, which, if you look at the league, you think, well, it's possible. But, you know, I'm not going to get too excited, put it that way.
I think they could definitely look at not losing is a potential.
I think being unbeaten is...
I can't see the winning run lasting a lot longer, if I'm honest, but I look down the fixture list and I don't fear anyone.
No, as I said at the top of the show, Wolves, they're away at Preston, then they're at home at Norwich. Norwich are in a bit of form now, and as Derby found out, they're no pushover. And then they're away at Fulham, so there's a potential there for Wolves to actually... I mean, I think February is just a test to see how good Wolves are. If they win all those three games, then, you know, they've won the league.
I mean, I think they're going to be pretty much home and dry by Easter, I would have thought.
But if they drop points here then, and Villa carry on winning, then we go into March, single-figure gap, then who knows what can happen.
I mean, I think if you're getting down to sort of 6-7 points, just don't know how Wolves are going to react. Now, they haven't been under pressure all season. You know, they came out the trap so quickly, and no one's really challenged them since the word go. So, you know, it might be that they're just not used to being pressured. We just don't know. It's been a real walk in the park.
I think it'll be an interesting game when they come to Villa Park, put it that way.
I think we'll be bang up for it.
Yeah, no, definitely. No, I think it'll be almost like a one-off kind of game, because I don't think it'll matter that much in terms of final places.
No, I don't think so. I think, you know, you look down the fixture list and you see, you know, sort of Cardiff and Derby. derby right at the end of the season on the horizon, not Fulham this weekend especially, and you think those could be really big games in determining where we're going to finish. I don't necessarily see the Wolves game as being a big battle between the two teams. What I think it's more a case of Villa are going to want to put the points on the board,
yeah,
and really get a bigger gap as they can if possible.
But no, I think it would be more like a Midlands Cup final rather than having any implication on the actual league table, unless Wolves slip up in the rest of February.
Yeah, I think it's a nice novelty to watch a local derby with two teams who really do actually want to play football now as well,
and that are already promoted, hopefully. Right, there's going to be a new section in the show if listeners are obliging. We mentioned last week, I mentioned Jim Smith, the ex-Blues derby manager, in relation to living a few doors down from my dad once upon a time when he was younger. A listener, Noel, wrote in with a little story about Jim Smith, and we thought about, since we use the word allegedly quite a lot on the podcast, to actually have a section called Allegedly, where supporters, if you email us on... I think I'll set up a specific email address for it. But in the meantime, contact@myoldmansaid.com with any funny stories you have of either players or managers that might be, let's say, funny. So Noel's example was, he wrote in and he said, after hearing you talk about Jim Smith, I thought I'd tell you, and this is obviously allegedly, after hearing you talk about Jim Smith, I thought I'd tell you a quick anecdote about him. Back in the 80s, my mate's dad was driving past St Andrews one weekday afternoon, and Jim Smith, who was the manager then, came driving out of the ground in his Jag, hitting my mate's dad's car. After getting out the car, he sussed that Jim was pretty pissed up. Allegedly. To resolve the issue, Jim Smith offered him two Blues season tickets to keep hush about the incident. Being a Blues fan, he gladly took him up on the offer. No more was said. It never got out in the papers, and no police were involved. Jim got away with it.
And he had to sit through 23 games of absolute garbage.
Yeah. Little did he know that not only did he get his car smashed up by Jim Smith, that he got punished with that season ticket as well. So it was a bit of a double kick in the gonads. But if you've got any fun stories about players and managers, do email us on contact@myoldmansaid.com. Discretion guaranteed all the time.
Sometimes.
Noel also went on to say after that little story that he also has a sex tape of Jim Smith's doing interesting things with a blue dildo, if you'd like that sent in.
That's part of penance signing ceremony.
Yeah, I think it's a chapter in Mental. Right, we'll probably do a short little show to preview the Fulham game, which is a bit of a pivotal one coming up. In the meantime, please do rate the podcast on Apple, iTunes. Give it 5 stars and whatever you want to say about it. Also, if you want to support the show, and where are we today? We're out on location in the city. Since the city is ours now, we thought we'd get out and about. But we fastly realised that we need some audio equipment. So if you want to support the show so we can do better on-location podcasts, do become a patron. Go to myoldmansaid.com and click on the patron menu option for more details. That'd be much appreciated. Also, when you see the podcast on Facebook and Twitter, please do share and get it out there, and you know, tell your friends about it as well. So until the Fulham game and show, it's goodbye from me, and it's goodbye from him.
Don't forget to keep your postcodes close to your chest. Ta-ra.
The final 10 minutes of the 126th episode of Neighbours in the Second City. And Aston Villa looking for the killer strike. There it is! And there it is in style from Conor Hourihan! They've turned on the power! They are building momentum! They are looking menacing! And they may just have won the Second City derby again! Incredible!
My old man said...
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.